Hello there and welcome to the official EFL podcast. This week we'll be beside the seaside with Blackpool boss Neil Critchley.
Yeah, I'm loving my time here again. I think my values are perfectly aligned with the people and the supporters at this football club. I get great support from my owner Simon above me and the people around me.
Gary Weaver from Sky Sports is back to co-host, and Cardiff's Reuben Colwell is this week's victim slash participant of the 72 in 72. It's the official EFL podcast. So, it's another international break, the final one of this calendar year. Next up is Christmas, of course. But first, before all that, your early present is co-host Gary Weaver back here alongside me for this one. And as I said, it's an international break, but no rest for the wicked. Gary, how are you?
I'm all right, Crutch. If I was a gift, I would be returned.
Weaver comes with a receipt. Don't you worry about that. Let's get stuck into the Championship. As I said, there's no games this week, but there's plenty to talk about. Leicester City, back-to-back defeats. Have the wheels come off for the Foxes? Do we go overboard on this?
No, they haven't come off for the Foxes, have they? Come on. Look, this is the Championship. There is always a fall, no matter how well you're doing, no matter what's going on, there's always a fall. We saw it with Burnley last season. We've seen it many times. It's how you respond to that fall. And I'm sure Leicester will respond. So no, Pruts. The wheels, I'm sure, have not come off. However, if they keep losing, do not play this back.
Yes. And we're here for balanced, well-thought-out critique rather than hyperbole. Not that on the official EFL podcast. Ipswich, though, level on points. A team that came up, of course, from League One. Level on points with Leicester City at the top of the Championship. This story keeps going and going and going. We've mentioned on here before that we both spoke to Kieran at the same time and he very much underplayed it. And that seems like a long time ago, doesn't it? It was summer then. It was a wonderful balmy day. I'm looking outside. The weather's awful, but it's all sunshine for Ipswich, isn't it?
It is. And the way they're going about it as well, some style. If you want goals, you go and watch Ipswich Town right now, don't you? They're being asked questions. They're coming up with the answers. I know Kieran wasn't too happy with the final 15 minutes against Swansea at the weekend. Didn't think that should have been a 3-2 game. But it was. But you're right, Kieran's playing it down. I mean, just going back to Leicester quickly, Pruts. Enzo Maresca, you were there actually the other night, Leicester Leeds. Enzo Maresca, after the game, had the misfortune of being stuck in a corridor with me and Don Goodman for 10 minutes. I know, nightmare. He didn't even leave, which I was stunned about. But what a great...
Enzo, I'm trying to chat to Don Enzo. Can you leave me alone?
There's the exit. You can go if you want. But no, he just spoke to us about the Championship, you know, and he's obviously they've been beaten by Leeds. But he was like, look, we couldn't maintain what we're doing. We know these falls are going to come. He mentioned Ipswich. He mentioned, obviously, Leeds. He was really impressed with Sunderland. He was still raving about them. But yeah, he is another like Kieran who's keen to play it down in terms of what's going on. But obviously, Ipswich's start, I mean, it's the best start by a newly promoted team in the second tier ever. So that tells you how well they're doing. And as you said, the story goes on.
It's fantastic to see from both of them. And as we kind of discussed just a few weeks ago, going into that Leicester-Leeds game, it could have been a 17-point gap at the end of that game between first and third. It's been dragged back to 8 at the moment. Leeds, of course, sitting third, winning 6 out of the last 7. Again, I mean, all the consternation in the summer, ownership, management, players that were there that didn't want to be there, underperforming players that kind of were in through the outdoor. We looked at their recruitment, the players that they brought in, the ones that were already there, the likes of Somerville and Routeur.
Yeah.
That front four is coming to fruition and they've got a team that's very balanced, it seems like, and they've really kind of got everyone back on board at Elland Road, haven't they?
Yeah, they've got a calm manager, Daniel Farke. You speak to people behind the scenes at Leeds and say that, you know, even under Bielsa, it was fraught. You know what I mean? We know that.
But Daniel's even in the good days.
Yeah, but Daniel's brought a calmness to the situation, despite what was going on in the summer. You look at the spine of that team as well, Pruts. You know, you look at Ilan Meslier, who had a bit of a nightmare towards the end of last season, obviously. He's come good again. You look at Roden. Yeah. And you look at Joe Roden, he's been immense for them at the back. Kamara and Padu have been excellent. The front four, as you mentioned, you know, Routeur is making so many chances for other players. He was he used to be at Hoffenheim, as you know. And when he's at Hoffenheim, they said to him, who's your favourite former Hoffenheim player? And he said, Roberto Firmino. And he kind of does a kind of similar job, if you like, in terms of defender from the front, the creation of chances. He'd obviously love to score more goals. But it's just all clicked for Leeds. And I think we said at the start of the season, Daniel Farke's teams, they do, no matter who they are, they do take a while to get going. But once they get going, you don't see them again in terms of they will disappear in terms of points and moving up the table. And that's what's happened. But Daniel Farke's calmness has had a big part to play, and the style. And as I say, that spine of the team and that front four, you know, they're brilliant to watch.
Another tremendously calm manager, Russell Martin, has led Southampton up to fourth. There was a cracking interview with him and David Walsh in the Times, I think it was, talking about his background, which I found fascinating, knowing the man as we do, Gary. Preston up to fifth, back-to-back wins for Ryan Lowe and Preston. I'm just trying to work out how much he enjoyed Preston's win at Blackburn. I mean, a lot or a little, or
who, Ryan?
Among us, yes.
Oh, he loves every win, doesn't he? He loves every win. Yeah, you know, I saw him, well, saw the game and saw him post-match as well. And he loves that celebration with the fans, especially, you know, going there. I did the game last season where Preston were fantastic, played some brilliant football, some great goals last season, and obviously went and did the job again. And you know what it's like when you win derby games, Pruts? I know it's not Blackburn's big derby, it's not Preston's derby number one, but they're still so close to each other. And, you know, in the land in between Blackburn and Preston, the fans do cross over and see a lot of each other. So that is, that's a big derby win. And I think, there was a spell where Preston obviously started brilliantly. Ryan will tell you himself that, you know, the XG and all the other metrics that they look at went great. So it suggested a fall could be on the way. And there was a slight one, but then to win that and go to Blackburn and do what they did, you know, it shows that they could potentially have a say at the top end again this season.
Sheffield, it's not Sheffield Wednesday, I bet they were. I bet they do wish they were rounding at the top six. Sunderland are rounding at the top six. Their last game going into the international break was a win against Birmingham, obviously now known as Wayne Rooney's Birmingham, because
that's yes, full title.
Big players going. Still winless, Rooney at Blues. What's your thoughts?
Well, I did them against Sunderland on Saturday. Look, he's trying to change the style, as we know. One thing to say about the previous manager, John Eustace, he did brilliantly there. You know, and if a storm is coming, Birmingham have created this themselves, you know. John took them to sixth. He wanted to play a more progressive style this season, more possession-based. They were a counter-attack last season. He didn't want to rush it. He's looking at the players that he's got, and that's how he tailors game plans also to the opposition. Obviously, Wayne's come in and gone, we're playing this way. He did that. I was talking to a journalist at the Washington Post who covered DC United. He said Wayne wanted to play a similar way there, but they didn't feel they had the players to do it. Playing out from the back, they conceded a few goals. The goalkeeper was chipped a few times because he was playing so high up. And ultimately, they didn't make the playoffs. Obviously, John Ruddy's not playing that high up. No. But there is, what I would say, in that first half, you could see what they were trying to do, and there was a certain energy about Birmingham. He will need time because it does take time, as Wayne keeps saying, and he's probably fed up of saying it. But, you know, when they come back from this international break is huge for them to lay down what he wants to do. And then they got Sheffield Wednesday and Rotherham, I think, as their next two games. They're huge now for Birmingham because suddenly they've gone from looking up the table to looking over their shoulders.
We mentioned Rotherham, of course. They've dispensed with the services of Matt Taylor, which means from Huddersfield down, everyone's changed the manager. So it's a roll of the dice with a lot of games left. A wonderful job, of course, that Matt Taylor did down at Exeter City. Came up to take over from Paul Warne. Did the... what was the unthinkable at Rotherham, which was staying in the division, wasn't it? Yeah. With their bouncing between the Championship and League One. He moves on, though. What's your take on that? Because the kind of broad consensus is a tremendously likeable man and manager, but they find themselves in a perilous situation, second bottom of the Championship.
Well, again, I did them last week against Ipswich. When I heard the news, I was a bit surprised. Nothing should surprise you in football. You know, I actually, on the day of the Ipswich rearranged game, I texted Tony Stewart, the owner, and said, look, is Matt under pressure here? Because that would be unlike you, Tony, to put him under pressure. Tony replied, didn't say yet or no, but he mentioned, you know, the Sheffield Wednesday performance cut deep, not just the defeat from the team over the road, in the city over the road. It cut deep, the display. And Tony, you know, he kind of mentioned that to me, but he did say as well, look, we've had a nightmare with injuries, which they have had, especially at centre-back. In the centre-back departments. I mean, even at the weekend, I think they lost Clucas, Cafu, Ayala, injured again. And he's had so many injuries to deal with. Matt himself did say to me, look, I know we can't have too many Sheffield Wednesday performances, although, or I will be under pressure. And from Tony Stewart's point of view, the Rotherham owner, again, you know, he's invested more this summer than he has before as owner. The budget is bottom 10 in the league, but still, I think they broke the, well, they did, they broke their record transfer fee twice in the summer. So they don't want to be caught up in that again. But you're right, Putz. I mean, you know, and it's not meant to sound patronising because I don't think it is, but every time Rotherham stay up in the Championship, that's a big achievement in itself. But the investment Tony's put in, you know, I think he was hoping for more this season, the players they'd signed. And as for Matt, as I say, when I spoke to him, he did say we can't have any more Sheffield Wednesday performances. They get the late draw against Ipswich, and then what happens at Watford, and they just can't. I think they got 1 point away from home, which was at Southampton, and that's it. But I was a little bit surprised that the change was made, in just my own personal opinion.
Snapping at their heels at the top end of League One. It's a quiet week in League One. As I said, it's deathly silent in the Championship. It's very, very quiet in League One, just two games. But at the top, yeah. Pompey still unbeaten. Oxford, of course, licking their wounds after Liam Manning moved on. Bolton in third, Peterborough in fourth. More on them in just a second. Stevenage and Barnsley. Down in eighth, you find Blackpool, only a few points away from the playoff places. And we've seen it before. A manager leaves, a manager comes back. The first port of call is hopefully winning round the faithful that he abandoned to move on to pastures. Yeah. Don't worry, I'm only saying this because we've got Neil Critchley coming up. We're going to ask him about it to his face on Zoom. But I suppose the great currency, or the only currency that he's got, is to go back in and do a good job. And I think in broad terms, that's what's happening.
Yeah, I saw the owner say when Neil was reappointed, you know, we looked everywhere and hoping there would be someone else other than Neil Critchley. But every time we looked at everything and did our research and data and et cetera, it kept pointing back to Neil Critchley. And look, I spoke to Neil when he left Blackpool, when he went to Aston Villa. And he just said, it's a huge decision. But the offer, an opportunity to work with Premier League players, I just couldn't turn it down in a first team environment. Obviously, he worked with the youth team at Liverpool and the under 23s, and just to see how I can get my messages across, just to see how Premier League players prepare, because I think he was always going to be a manager again, a number one, but just have that education. And he left Blackpool with a heavy heart, let's face facts, he did. Obviously, he left Villa then when Gerrard left, and ended up at Queen's Park Rangers, didn't work out for him there. But as you know, Prutz, you get places where you just seem to fit, don't you? You just seem to fit. Like me and you, we just seem to fit.
We do.
and that's kind of what he's found at Blackpool, albeit, again, he's going to have to work up from League One.
Well, I mean, I suppose this is inadvertent, but it's the perfect segue to talk about Peterborough and Darren Ferguson. Well done,
oh,
Gary. That's
thanks,
amazing.
Yeah,
because,
didn't
of course, if there's anyone that you would speak to about going back to a certain place, then Darren's your man with regards to the Posh. We were both there, and we've referenced it a few times, normally when we talk about Sheffield Wednesday, but the absolutely titanic semi-final second leg in the League One playoffs last season, where Darren would be forgiven for kind of thinking, I hate football, I'm never going near a football pitch ever again off the back of that. But he spoke very honestly and openly after that. You could see the hurt in his face. So then the decision comes, I don't know whether I presume mutually with Darren McAntony and Darren himself, where they've got that type of working relationship over such a long period of time, where I bet they can be honest and open and kind of saying this is where we want to go. But he's stuck around. Peterborough currently fourth, beat Salford in the FA Cup, scored five at the weekend. Sounds very posh-like, doesn't it? Lots of goals, very attacking football.
Yeah.
And currently where they find themselves in the run that they're on, and given the fact that they are chipping away at the leaders in League One, maybe the drama, maybe the heartache of the playoffs is something they're going to completely bypass.
Probably fuel them. I mean, that was a big derby win against Cambridge, wasn't it? The 5-0. I think the thing with Peterborough is they have been the capital of entertainment in the AFL down the years, haven't they, with the goals. And one thing they do, which is amazing what they do, is they replace, they replenish, they rejuvenate, they come again. I mean, you look at what they've done this season. Johnson Clark-Harris, Golden Boot winner. You know, he's not getting in the team. I know he scored the other night in the cup, but he's not getting in the team. And he was supposed to leave in August. So they said, you know, Darren McAntony is a big, obviously part of this as the owner. Right, that's the end of the road now. We go again. We change things. Off we go. And Johnson Clark-Harris, you know, he'll probably go in January. But they've got this amazing front four, which when they click is, you know, just ripping teams apart. Obviously, Poku's part of it. Mason Clark, Randall. You know, and I mentioned Johnson Clark-Harris. But obviously, Jack Butler left as well in terms of going to where did he go in the summer? Ipswich Town. So it's just
you having this conversation with yourself.
Yeah. I proceed there. Well, no, it's amazing how they just kind of go about their business and go right. We're ripping this up now. We're going to do it this way. We're going to be quick, dynamic up front. Here's how we do it, and they just always seem to find a way. And how they recovered from that. I mean, I was sat next to, at Wednesday that night, the Peterborough analysts were on the gantry, sat next to us, and I just, I got vision still of their heads just hanging like that, with the fans celebrating all around them because they saw their badges.
Yeah.
And how they recover from that, I don't know, but they have. That's football, isn't it? It's what you do.
It is football, bloody hell, as a famous manager once said. League Two, you're on duty for Sky Sports on Saturday lunchtime.
Yes.
It's Notts County against Bradford City. Now, of course, Graeme Alexander has taken over at Bradford City, considered a goal in the first minute in his first game. So
yes,
I think
20
from his
seconds,
point of view, there's stuff to work on. More on Graeme in just a second. But in your prep, in the way that you look after these games, Luke Williams at Notts County, I'm sure you've got chapter and verse about what they're after and what their aims are. Mischievously, is he going to be there?
Do you know what? I spoke to him yesterday for about 20 minutes on the phone, and he's a brilliant person to talk to, just how he, you know, tells you about his tactics and how he wants to play. I did say at the end of the phone call, Luke, will you be there on Saturday, by the way? It's just a waste of time. And he was laughing because obviously he's been linked with Oxford, where, amongst other clubs. I think that was the fault of Ruben Rodriguez, because he's gone from Notts to Oxford. And the Oxford or journalist asked him what they think of Luke Williams. Oh, brilliant. Yeah, it'd be great if he was here.
Really?
Suddenly, boom, being linked with it.
And he had a tremendous game at the weekend, didn't he, Rodriguez? Maybe he's doing everything to try and get him to Oxford.
Yeah, exactly. So it was. It was a good conversation with Luke. Obviously, more on that at the weekend of the game.
Yeah.
But again, you know, we're talking to Neil Critchley later about stepping out as a number two and, you know, development footballer to a number one. And he did that at Swindon. I know a lot of, as we know at the time, a lot of things going on at Swindon Town.
Yes.
And, you know, he said to me he's waiting for the right environment to step out as a number one again. And that's why he's done it at Notts County. He says this is the toughest time at the moment, actually, because obviously call-ups, injuries, defeats, he's having to respond to that. So he said this is the toughest time as Notts manager. He wants to show he can dig in, as well as playing all this beautiful football, he can dig in as well. It's a big game coming up. He feels there's still a lot of learning to do in terms of his players adapting to that level. The league was all about Wrexham, wasn't it? But likes of Notts County and Stockport, so we know they'll come on to. Are kind of writing the headlines too.
Well, let's talk about Stockport, given what we've seen from them and Dave Challoner. You're right, there are big football clubs, well-followed football clubs, well-publicised football clubs in that particular division, and it is blurring the lines between the EFL and moving into the non-league and possibly moving forward into League One, these clubs that are doing so very well after coming into League Two. But Stockport County, again, another team with playoff disappointment at the end of last season.
Yeah.
I mean, the streak, take out of it, they're losing the EFL trophy to Bolton, but the streak that they've been on, that shows. I mean, we talk about momentum being a key factor in any kind of promotion push. My word, have they got it right now?
Yeah, and as you say, it's how do you recover from playoff defeat, especially getting to the final as well. And they've done that. We spoke to Dave Challoner a few weeks ago, didn't we?
He
told us about the forensic way they went into the transfer market. They wanted a dribbler who's completed the most dribbles in Leagues 1 and Leagues 2 last season, get Louis Barry in, obviously get Nick Powell in. They've actually got a photo on their canteen wall at the training ground of their dressing room when they lost at Wembley. So a photographer took a photo of it all, and they've put it on the canteen wall at the training grounds just to fuel their drive season, to remind them of what happened. But we mentioned before about their plan to get to the Championship in 2027. That, you know, they've got a plan there. They're very ambitious. And Edgeley Park puts, I say it all the time, I love going there because it is a vibrant, atmospheric, right on the edge place when it's right up for it. And they have to use the power of that. And of course, closest ground to the Mersey in Greater Manchester. Did you know that? Closest ground, football ground to the Mersey in Britain.
I was just about to say that, but you took out my mouth.
Until Everton build their new one and get it done. But yeah, it's such a powerful place to go to as an opposition team. I'd imagine, I certainly feel it on the gantry when we go to or the press box. So it's no surprise, I don't think, that they've done what they've done. Maybe a little surprise is that they've kept the momentum going for this long this season.
I do love those subliminal messages. As my career was meandering to an asthmatic end on loan at Coventry, commuting between North Yorkshire and
I remember
the Midlands,
watching you.
You'd come in on a Monday morning because Coventry weren't doing well. I mean, they were doing that badly that they had to get me involved. Which I don't know whether that was a good thing or bad thing.
Yeah,
but TVs up in or monitors up in the changing room and on the way into the training ground. Monday morning, you are in a relegation battle after a 3-hour car drive. You kind of go. Not what I needed right now.
Is that what they put up on the screen?
Yeah, yeah.
You are rubbish.
But that, yeah.
Sort this out.
You lot are terrible. Be less terrible today. I think something, there's a message in there somewhere. Yeah. But that was Stephen Presley. And knowing Stephen like I do, and knowing his kind of, again, his mischievous side. Possibly he was in there having a laugh with Neil McFarlane, his number two, thinking, I'm having this lot. You lot were rubbish.
Was it only when you walked in?
Yeah, yeah. Right. It was just above my place. Just you are in a relegation battle. The rest of these lot will be fine. Which, considering the team had Callum Wilson in, I think he did okay in the end.
Yeah, John Fleck as well.
Right. Not saying they've got anything to owe me for, but lads, you owe me for your professional career. Anyway, first half done. You have been absolutely exceptional, Gary Weaver. The energy that you bring, the insight that you bring, the stats, and whether you think they're boring or not, I love them anyway. That's a
thanks,
different
mate. I'm
altogether.
Like you in your Coventry days, aren't I?
Yeah, yeah, bang average. Anyway, we're going to take a little break now. 72-72 is back. Cardiff's Ruben Colwell is our latest contestant. Let's see how he gets on.
My name's Ruben Colwell, and this is 72-72. Cardiff, Blackburn, Sunderland, Leeds, Swansea, Bristol, Bristol Rovers, Preston, Plymouth, Portsmouth, Birmingham. Sutton. Random ones running there. I'm absolutely struggling here. Hull. Peterborough. QPR. Watford. Ipswich. I've just gone here. I'm not gonna lie, but I don't think that's me done to us. I'm gone.
Okie dokie, Ruben Colwell there taking the 72-72 test. He got 17, which means on the leaderboard, can you be 10th on a leaderboard? Matt Smith is at the top. John Coleman follows him. Mark O'Brien, Liam Rossini, Andrew Moran, Valerian Ishmael, Alfie May, Gary Rout, Stuart Dallas, Ruben Colwell in 10th and all on his own on the next page because the graphic cat fit more than 10 people on is Aaron Ramsey on 13. Anyway, there's still a long time left in the season. I'm sure Aaron's hoping that someone does fundamentally worse than he has. Anyway, someone who's not doing fundamentally worse, someone who's doing very, very well indeed, is back at a place he knows extremely well. Neil Critchley, Blackpool boss, joins us on the official EFL podcast. Neil, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's a pleasure. I was racking my brains because we had a chat on the podcast last season, didn't we? Safe to say things have changed. Geography's changed. Conditions have changed as well. You're back at a place that you know very well indeed, as I said in your introduction, where you had a lot of success and it's going seemingly swimmingly so far. Just talk us through going back to Blackpool, how it's been emotionally, mentally and professionally.
Yeah, it was an easy decision for me to come back. It was an extremely difficult decision for me to leave in the first place. Mm-hmm. So to have the opportunity to be able to come back to a club that I had fond memories at, it was something I wanted to do. I'm loving my time here again. I think my values are perfectly aligned with the people and the supporters at this football club. I get great support from my owner, Simon, above me, and the people around me. We've got really good staff here. There's been quite a change in the playing squad staff from last time. There's quite a lot of players left in the summer. And we're obviously trying to build towards, you know, some of the success that we had last time, but we understand that, you know, it takes a little bit of time.
Is the feel the same as before? I mean, it's akin, people obviously use that very lazy analogy, which I'm going to use right now, as in breaking up with someone and you're getting back together. Yes, stay with me here. It's a bit of a leap. But the fundamentals of what make Blackpool, Blackpool, the geography, the people, the feeling around the place, it's a wonderful place to take in a game of football. It's an intimidating place if you are a travelling team. Are they all kind of in the bricks and the mortar of the place for you?
Yeah, they are. There's something that is, you know, you've got a sort of a golden thread, if you like, that runs through the football club. And that comes from the supporter base. It's a very unique football club. But actually, when I rejoined, I got a text message off someone well known within football, and he just said, like, there is something different about that football club. And it's true. When you work here, there's something unique about it. It is different. And we've got a last year, you know, through different circumstances, we probably lost who we were a little bit. And we, you know, we took a wrong turn, if you like, and we've now got to try and get back onto stable ground, build consistency of message and who we are again. And that's what we're working towards.
Neil, two questions, really. A, who was it that sent you that text? B, I'm only joking. B, was it a sense, I know we spoke a couple of times when obviously you went to Villa and then Queen's Park Rangers, and you were very vocal in saying how difficult a decision it was to leave Blackpool, but was there a sense of, I'm not too sure what reaction I'm going to get here from the fans, or were they immediately won over again by you?
No, I think there was a little bit of apprehension, understandably. You know, I was quite vocal in when I came back about, I'd never been in that situation before in my life. And I could have handled it better than what I did. And I apologize for that. But sometimes you're never the master of your own destiny. You don't know when opportunities are going to come in your life. And I think it's that trust. It takes time to build. And that comes through, you know, how you talk, how you behave, how you treat people, how you speak to people. And that was probably lost. But that's something that you can regain again.
I think the thing that we all kind of embrace about football is that, you say, the currency of a manager of a player is about the here and now. And the fact that you have got a team that's eighth, that's progressing in the EFL Trophy, that's ticking a lot of boxes on the pitch, obviously that helps. What's the challenge that you found this season with this incarnation of Blackpool, and what ultimately are the aims? Because I've got, purely because having spoken to you before and working with Colin Calderwood in the past, fond memories of you in the COVID playoff final, waving up to the gantry after managing to get through that, which, just going back to that, I mean, in itself was slightly odd when you think about it now, isn't it? When you look at Wembley, which is huge, and a small portion of fans allowed in. What was that like for you? Because, I mean, we were all very more than happy to see your success, but being in it and being front and centre of that kind of COVID final must have been slightly odd.
It was quite a surreal sort of experience. But having said that, most of my footballing background and development as a coach was not playing in front of many supporters anyway.
Never thought about it that way.
So that season, actually, when we were playing in front of no supporters, I actually think was a benefit to me in terms of me being able to coach from the side of the pitch and help the players. They could hear me. Now they can't hear me, which they're probably thankful for.
Are you sure?
Yeah, thankful about. But going back to what you said before, it's like the difference now is there's a little bit of a different expectation. We've been in the Championship for the last 2 years. And, you know, look, I think that's got to be our ambition, that we'd like to get back there again at some point and try and be a sustainable Championship club. But we understand that's not easy. It's going to take a lot of hard work. And last season, we obviously, you know, we lost a lot of games. And so to go from a team that is sort of playing not to lose to now trying to play to win is completely different, and it takes a completely different mindset. And that's something that after a failure, you know what it's like, players can lose confidence and a little bit of belief, and we have to make sure that we restore that and give them that confidence to go and play to win the game rather than not to lose.
Is that more mindset than anything technically or tactically?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, 100%, yeah. And I think we've seen that in some of our games this season, when we've actually gone for the game and really gone for it. We've been really difficult to play against. So we've got to try and release that handbrake. And that's not always easy because, you know, teams are definitely giving us a lot more respect. I think this time they see us as, you know, a good team and a tough team to play against. And they're setting up to make it difficult for us. So it's not just that we've got a divine right to go and win every single game, and we're certainly not. We're not doing that. We've got things to improve upon, but I've seen lots of positive signs as well.
Neil, there is like a bit of a trend at the moment of, you know, development coaches like yourself, under-21s, under-23s, being offered managers' jobs now. Is it a big decision for you to step away from developing players to suddenly going out on your own in the EFL?
Yeah, I think that comes down to, you know, your personal choice and your ambition as a coach. And it was always my ambition at some point that I wanted to go and test myself in the senior game. I was always a believer that you could create the environment and the learning environment that we had at a development level, under 21 level, you could replicate that in a first team environment if you got the right players and the right staff around you. And I've been very fortunate with the players and the staff that we've had that they've bought into that. You know, prime example here now, we've got Jordan Rhodes, who's 33, and yeah, he still wants to learn and get better. And it's so refreshing. He's such a modest, humble man. And you think, you know, it's brilliant for me. You know, I'm learning from him, and I love working with players like that.
Hasn't he been 33 for about 5 years?
But he looks, honestly, he still looks about 23.
You know? He does, to be fair.
Yeah, he does.
He is universally known as the nicest footballer anyone's ever met, and hopefully that will always be the case. His dad was our goalie coach at Sheffield Wednesday, who had a bit more of an edge to him, but we won't go into that right now. I think we all know what I'm talking about. I'm really intrigued with that, Neil, because that change of and having that experience of playing junior football and playing professional football and different management styles and the way that what I hear from former teammates who have become managers that haven't had 20 years worth of coaching experience like yourself is it's the biggest bugbear is, and it's such a catch-all phrase, you can't talk to players anymore. I mean, obviously you can't talk to them in a certain way that perhaps we were used to 25 years ago, but that jump from development of younger players and younger people and the very kind of up-to-date 3 points, promotion, you know what I mean, jobs on the line, etc., that is adult football. Again, that must push different buttons for you, but also work the different gears and make you a more rounded coach. Is that where the satisfaction comes from?
Yeah, definitely. That's 100% right. You look at players are different now. The dressing rooms are different. Society's different. You know, I was a failed footballer, but I was in enough dressing rooms to know what it was like 15, 20 years ago. And it is different. But
good different or bad different or just different?
Yeah, just different, I think. I think there was some positives from the past and some of the dressing rooms, and it built a different type of spirit and a togetherness at that time, but you can do that in different ways. I just think it's different now, and here, you know, you look at the people we've got here in the dressing room. We've got is I've never worked with really a player that if you treat them well and you speak to them right and you give them respect, that they don't want to learn and they don't want to improve and get better. I saw that at Liverpool. You know, the top players, they want to get better. Because they're passionate about what they do. They love football and they want to be the best that they can be. And if you provide that right environment and they see that you're credible, you know what you're talking about, you've got good knowledge, but you've got an empathy for them. And then I think when you bring all that together, it can be very powerful.
Is that the thing, Neil? So, I mean, we talk about Trent Alexander-Arnold. Obviously, you work with him and Curtis Jones, and you see their developments. You know, you got the influence, I suppose, of Jurgen Klopp, who I was reading he gave your leaving speech. I'm not sure if that's true or not. A, did he give you a hug? And B, is he someone that you can go to, as well as Steve Cooper and Brendan Rodgers, and just use all these kind of influences to kind of go your way with it?
They've all been big influences on me. Yeah, massive. You know, you'd have to be walking around with a, you know, sort of a balaclava on not to take up, you know, like not to take notice of what they do. They're unbelievable what they do. They're fantastic people. Again, great people, good coaches, deal with people well, and that they're incredibly talented at what they do. So, yeah, for me to be able to work closely with some of them people and see them work, that had a massive influence on me, without a doubt.
Throwing it back to the here and now, if you can throw things back to the here and now, there's only you, Shrewsbury, Stephen and Lincoln in action at the weekend. Have you got a feeling you're going to turn around and look at the kind of director's box and Ian Everett's going to be there, John Mussini is going to be there, Paul Warren's going to be there, Michael Appleton's going to, it's going to be the roguest of rogue galleries watching you in action. I mean, what does that feel like? I mean, everyone likes a weekend off, but we are right in the middle of the season. Does that feel odd? Have you heard anything from any of the managers? Do you expect any of them turning up to do that bit of research?
No, I'd expect quite a few. You know, like you say, there's not many games on, is there, this weekend, and probably not many in the Northwest. So I imagine our director's box and the scouts' tickets will be an extremely long list on Saturday. But fine, it gives us a chance to showcase who we are and what we're about. Maybe that's something. I think there's only two games on in League One, so like you say, that might be something for us or the EFL to look at in the future. But we're playing. It is what it is, and we look forward to a really good game against Shrewsbury.
I'd like to say I'd pass up the food chain, but I've got minimal impacts. We just do the podcast. You know, nothing to do structurally with fixtures comes my way at all. So you've got, obviously, progress in the EFL Trophy, given where you are in the league as well, and you've been very vocal about how you want to make sure that every team that is put out, every competition that you go in, it's there to be attacked, isn't it? It's there to be won. Games are there to be won, and confidence and momentum is there to be built.
Yeah, and I think that's so key again from last season, to build confidence and momentum every. And it's also that it's how you work. It's the importance that you place on every single game. And if we go into an EFL Trophy game and we're making, like we did the other night, 11 changes, but those players feel like you're devaluing that competition or you're not placing importance on that game, then how are they going to feel going into that game? Mm. You know, for me, and again, that was something that I thought Jürgen was unbelievable at. You know, every single game, how they prepared was exactly the same, even if it was a friendly or so. It becomes a process. The players believe in that process. They're committed to it. And if you're committed to them, then it builds something that's more important than just the outcome of the game. And that gives you the best chance of getting the right outcome, obviously. But you could see that in, obviously, some of Liverpool's performances and some of the games that they, you know, they won from impossible situations. And when you look at some of the teams they put out, young teams in some of the competitions, even I was at times thinking, wow, I can't believe pick that team, and they would come up with the right performance and the right result. And that is because of the importance of everything, how they prepared, all the players were valued. And for me, that was why they were successful.
I'll tell you what, this has been wonderful, Neil. I asked Gary before we came on whether, and being a wonderful commentator as he is, he always does his
work. Yeah, not sure about that.
I just double checked. You have spoke. You do know Chris. He said, yeah, and I've spoken to him loads. So I was going to write down a Who Knows Critch Better quiz, but I know you've got things to do.
And well, the fact that you call Neil Critch beats me anyway. Is Neil Critchley manager?
He'll get off and he'll be saying, that cheeky calling me Critch. Critch. What's he giving him? Critch?
I'm happy with that. I'm happy.
Anyway, BFF Critch, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you, my friend. Thanks for joining us. We really do appreciate, I mean, I know it's a hectic schedule, but wish you all the best between now and the end of the season. Be good to catch up again soon.
Really appreciate it, guys. Thanks very
much. Yeah, good luck, Neil.
Thank you.
Weaver, top stuff. Do you want to say bye to Critch? Go on, you can say bye to Critch as well.
Bye, Critch. Brooks, I'll see you at Notts County.
Firm football friends there all round with our mate Critch. A big thank you to Neil Critchley, Gary Weaver and Ruben Colwell for joining me this week on the podcast. As always, if you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's David Prutton and I'll see you same time next week for another episode of the official EFL podcast.